Identification, this is tape MPSM4, side A, with Frank Hyde. So Frank, we just started on your footballing career, and you went on to become an extraordinary celebrity in the field. Can you summarise for me what you did in your football career, or what the highlights?
Well, what I did, I already mentioned to you that I started with Newtown in the thirds, and I finished up, I was captain of the thirds next year, and then I made first grade with Newtown. But Balmain became aware of the fact that I lived in their territory because I was born and bred in Millers Point, which in those days you had to play with the team if you lived in their area. And I, of course, was born and bred in Millers Point, and they were on to me. But Newtown had given me a false address out at Dulwich Hill somewhere with a woman by the name of Mrs. Hyde. And she was supposed to be my mother. Mum didn't like this too much, you know. But however, they were onto me, the rugby league were onto me, and they told me that I had to play with Balmain or nobody. So I came to Balmain after playing with Newtown in 37, and we won the City Cup in 37, and I was in that side. And I came to Balmain in 38, and Balmain made me captain of the first grade side immediately.
And didn't you play for New South Wales in 38?
Yes, and I played for New South Wales in 38, toured New Zealand in 38, played against New Zealand here, and then of course in Queensland with the New South Wales side, and then in 39, we won the competition with Balmain, and of course, I played for the state that year in Queensland and in Sydney. But I don't know how to phrase this, but in this time I was playing representative football, and I was approached by somebody who was in one of the city clubs. If I would be interested in going to England to play with Bradford Northern. I was almost, at that time, we were in the early throes of talking about matrimony, and I just didn't know what to do, you know. And I was deciding to, I almost did decide, because we played at the Sydney Cricket Ground on the Saturday. We won the grand final. This was in 1939. And we had a function at the Balmain Town Hall that night to celebrate. And I thought, well, this will be an ideal time to tell them that I was going to England the next year to play. And anyhow, everybody was having a wonderful time because we just won the grand final and everything. And the mayor moved in. And I thought, oh, well, you know, I'll wait Lee's finished and then I'll tell him. So he said, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to ask the band if they'd stop as from now. He said, I have some bad news. Hitler has marched into Poland and we are at war. And I think, I pulled the blind down. I didn't mind, you know. I wouldn't have been allowed anyhow. But I didn't mention anymore, and blow me down. That was the end of the season. At the start of next season, the war was well underway, and the Americans had moved into Fort Wallace at Newcastle, and I was by then a teacher in telephony at the Tech College, and their equipment up there at Fort Wallace was all that, and I was an expert at it all. So I went up to Newcastle as captain and coach of Waratah Mayfield. That's how I played for the city against the country in 39, and the country against the city in 40, and the city against the country in 41, you know, alternating for those years. But however, that's how it happened that I was in the country. I played for the country against the city after having played for the city against the country, and then, of course, the city against the country the next year.
And that would have been the end of your time then in Millers Point, was it, once you went to Newcastle?
No. We were married in 42. But while I was in Newcastle, my brothers, those at home, see, I'm the youngest of seven boys, and my brothers were living at 23 Windmill Street with my mother, and they decided that they'd move to the North Shore, and they moved to Lane Cove. Well, that put me in North Sydney Territory. So I told Harold Matthews, the Secretary of Balmain, I said, Harold, you want me to come back to Balmain? My mother is now living in Lane Cove. And he said, don't worry. And I moved from Newcastle to the hotel opposite the university at Glebe Point, which is Balmain Territory, you see. And I lived there for 28 days to qualify for Balmain. And then I moved over to Lane Cove, where my mother was living, and North Sydney were right onto me, you see. But at the Harold Matthews, who was the Secretary of Balmain, rang me and said, Frank, he said, we want you to stay for next year. I said, well, I'm living at Lane Cove. He said, well, if you break the 12 months, he said, you're right. So come back and live in the University Hotel, and that breaks the 12 months sequence, and you can play with Balmain again. So that I did. But he was too smart for himself. He didn't pay any rent, and he couldn't produce any rent receipts. So North Sydney protested on me, and I had to play with North Sydney. Well, I was captain and coach of North Sydney then when we were beaten in the grand final in 1943.
And Frank, why did your brothers and your mother move out of Millers Point?
Well, sweetheart, you know, by that time, the house in Millers Point was exactly the same as the house that I was born in. Now, all my other brothers were married and out, and Dad was dead, and Mum was there on her own. So they bought a beautiful place at Lane Cove, and I went and stayed there, and I'm glad we did, you know. And then we got married. See, Gabe and I got married then in 42, you see. And we lived up in Lane Cove, and then I bought a property in Lane Cove, and then, of course, I bought the property down here, or this one. And it's funny, I forget myself sometimes.
Okay, well, just because I'm interested in the later stuff, but I'm particularly still interested in the Millers Point stuff, before we started recording, you told me a story about how you had your first drink at the Hero. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, yes. Well, I'm the youngest of seven boys. One is a priest, but none of them are teetotalers, you know. And when I turned 16, that makes you eligible to drink in a pub, I'm told, or I was told. All the others took me up to the Hero Waterloo, which was only 70 yards from where I was born, and went in, and that's where I had my first drink in a pub.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, so much so that I've never knocked one back since.
You've never
knocked one back.
You've never had a beer since.
I have never knocked one back.
Oh, you've never knocked one back.
I've knocked plenty off.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I mean, you wonder sometimes how the hell this can be of interest to anybody else, you know.
Well, tell me about the hero of Waterloo. Were the pubs important places for people to meet?
Oh, well, yes, yeah. A common phrase when I was that high among my elders was, what pub do you drink at? What pub do you drink at? Now, the pubs in those days were meeting. There were no clubs. Clubs didn't come into being till very recent years, you know. There were no clubs. There were just pubs. And it was a common thing, for a common question to that'd be asked, you know, what pub do you drink at? You know, now, I could tell you the fellas that drank at the Palisade Hotel in Millers Point. I'd tell you who drank at the Lord Nelson Hotel. I could tell you who drank at the Orient Hotel. Those who drank at the Dumbarton Hotel. They selected them as their
group.
Well, their drink house, you know. And that's where they'd, if you wanted Archie McCrackenthorpe, oh, he's you'd find him around the Orient, you know. You know, Bob up and down, oh, they're down the Palisade, you'll find him.
And what was the routine for drinking? Would people knock off work and go there for a few beers?
Oh, yeah.
What about in the waterfront workers, when they did shift work, would they have one in the morning?
No, they closed at 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock closing.
6 o'clock closing in the evening, but weren't they open in the morning at 6 o'clock?
No, 10 o'clock.
Oh, 10 o'clock to six.
10 o'clock in the morning, 10 or 6.
Mm. And what else went on in the pubs? Did women go into the pubs?
The hero of Waterloo had a special room for women. And it was
about
that big,
2 meters square.
That big, and you had to walk down 4 steps to get into it. It's still there.
Can you sit down again, Frank? Yeah, sorry.
Sorry,
that's okay. You're right. Just watch your head there. You're right. Yeah. So it was only about 2 meters square,
yeah.
And you had to walk down. So the women were kept out of sight, really?
Oh, yes, yeah. I mean, three women, and there'd be the same three every day, you know. Old women, I mean, nothing wrong with it. But, of course, then, later on, it became, you know, anybody could go and have a drink in the pub.
What about the bookies, SP bookies? Were they on in the pub?
Yes, some. Yes, they did.
Did you have
some? In addition to houses, I mean, in the house next door to us in Windmill Street, Jack Noyes, he was the SP bookie. My mum would stand on a kitchen chair, and I've heard her say, Mr. Noyes, a shilling each way on Lord Kennaquare. I don't know Lord Kennaquare, whether he could run or jump or what, but over the fence, you know. God love her, it was the only interest that she had, other than cooking and washing and ironing and all that sort of thing for us.
Did she ever get lucky, have a big win?
Oh, no. But we had Mum when we were married. When we left there, we went to Lane Cove, by a lovely home at Lane Cove, and of course, you know, no better than this, I suppose, but it's a pity Mum died when she did. We could have just let her have what she, what we couldn't afford when we were young.
Did she ever talk about the old days, the plague?
Mum?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, she was born and bred down there, you know, in Kent Street, and See, they were married in Glebe then, Mum, were married in Glebe. Why? Mum must have been living out there. And they married. See, my father and his brother jumped ship. And they met these two girls, two McKenna girls, and they married them. Auntie Kate and Uncle Will. See, Auntie Kate was my mum's sister, and Uncle Will was my dad's brother, and they had all girls, and we had all boys. You know, it's amazing, wasn't it? You know?
And they lived around the corner in High Street.
Oh, no, we lived in 23 Winwell Street, and they lived in 57.
So you were in and out of each other's houses all the time.
Gosh, yeah. And yet I'm older than their eldest. Mary was their eldest, and I'm the youngest in our family, but I'm older than Mary.
And did the women help each other? Did they get together?
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, Mum and Auntie Kate were. Yeah. But they did it tough, you know. We went lived through the Depression and all that sort of thing. This is paradise. This is paradise now, compared to how things were when we were kids.
Your dad would have died just at the beginning of the Depression, wouldn't he? About 1930.
Yeah.
Do you remember, was he ever out of work with strikes and things?
Oh, yes, they had strikes. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And how would you cope for money when the men were on strike?
Well, of course, good question. I mean, I was that high, so I wasn't interested, you know. But there were times in our family with 9 mouths to feed and no money coming in. 9 mouths to feed and nothing coming in.
Somehow you managed.
My brother Jim, who was a main event boxer, he was a blacksmith at Mort's Dock. He was the only one in work at one stage there. But then others, my eldest brother Andy, he was a very talented bloke. He had to finish up as a top job, engineer in the telecommunications.
What sort of schooling did he get then?
Only to intermediate at Morris Brothers Churchill.
And then he went in and learnt the engineering in the company.
Well, I did too. I got my intermediate at St Patrick's Churchill, then later on, I went back to night school, and in the 1 year, I passed the leaving certificate.
And what made you want to do that?
Oh, well, to get a better position in the job I was in, because I was a telephone technician. But of course, that was 4th Division. But 3rd Division was the cream of the crop. And I, with that in mind, went there at night to night school, and I passed the leaving certificate, the next leaving certificate, and I finished up in charge of the technical training school.
Your mother must have been very proud of all her sons.
Oh, yeah. Not necessarily for their achievement. Not necessarily for their achievement, just from being what they were. Mum, she's a lovely woman. She's a lovely woman. And I think Dad would agree. I think Dad would agree. He worshipped the grounds he worked on, you know, as we all did. I remember if she had an old blanket, she'd square it off and roll a house brick up in it, tie it with a bit of wire on both ends, put it in the fuel stove. Went into bed with Dad. Went into bed with Dad to keep his feet warm. She wanted him to have blisters on his feet, you know. Isn't it amazing, those little things, they stick in your mind. Yeah, Dad and his house brick. And I in the winter, there'd be seven boys and mum and dad all clustered around a fuel stove in the winter while mum's trying to cook the tea, you know, and all of us standing around. I can remember, I was only that high. But
do you remember the ships leaving to go to war from the wharves?
I mean,
do you remember the ships leaving to go to war?
Oh, no, no.
You were gone by then.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that was 17. I was born in 16.
No. I mean the Second World War.
Oh, no. The Second World War, we'd gone from North Point.
You'd gone. I was wondering how the Second World War affected Millers Point.
Well, I don't know, because we'd left. Long since, you know. It was only when now that we come to mention it, how I came to be the Governor of the Rocks. You know, you haven't got all those details.
Tell me that story about how you came to be the Governor of the Rocks, Frank. Can you tell me the story?
Well, yeah, come on, I'll show
you. No, you did show me, but just tell me for the tape.
Did I show you up in the room?
Yeah, it's a great story. Can you tell me so that people listening can hear? Just tell me the story. It was in 1978, wasn't it?
Yes, but I was broadcasting football in those days, and of course, I was living in down the rocks, I was captain of Balmain, so when this business came of having a governor of the rocks, I mean, I was broadcasting at the time. I'd captained the Balmain Rugby League first grade side, the club, and I was starting a career in television and radio, you see. And I was approached by the police department. See, the police were... They were sort of sponsoring. They were big organisations sponsored individuals. Well, the police decided on me because they knew that I was born and bred down the rocks. And at that stage, well, I'd become a name in both playing football and then broadcasting football. Well, I was a natural as far as they were concerned. Well, the police came knocking on my door. What have I done now? Or what have I been caught at, you know? But anyhow, they put it to me, and I said, oh, yes, I'll be happy to help, you know. They said, but there's a bit of work involved. I said, what do you mean? They said, we intend to go around to the markets, you know, Paddy's markets, and markets out the western suburbs, for you to be, you know, introduced to people and all that sort of thing. It means you've got to get up about 4 o'clock in the morning, you know. And I did it. I did it. The police picked me up in a PD, and out we'd go to all of these places, you know, on the boundaries of the city. And I'd go around to all the stalls, and the police had introduced me. Well, they knew me, you know. They knew me before they knew the police, because I was broadcasting and playing, you know. Anyhow, that's how it came about. And anyhow, when I evidently walked in, you know, not because I was good looking or anything, but because it's the police, you know. They could get people to buy, you know, buy votes.
And the Governor of the Rocks was an honorary title.
Oh, it's an honorary thing, yeah.
And tell me then, the day you were inaugurated, you had to call the football as well.
Yeah, well, the day that I was inaugurated was a Saturday, naturally, because it's the day that everybody was able to be there. But I had to broadcast the football from Leichhardt Oval that day. Well, as it started in the morning, but as the day was going, I was getting a bit edgy, you know, because... Like, you know, I had a million ears to get stuck into in the afternoon. So anyhow, the police drove me. For the procession, it started down Circular Quay, up Argyle Cut, and in a big carriage, and I was done up as an admiral or a colonel or something or other, you know, in that gear. And anyhow, when it was all over, I still had this thing, and I said to the police, "Listen, you've got to get me to Lycan Oval. I've got to, you know, set the gear up and all that sort of thing." So, okay. So I was taken over to Lycan Oval, and I'm in the back of the PD car with this admiral's gear on, taking me pants off, you know, and me jumper. And anyhow, I finally got dressed in this gear. Just as well it was a PD, because, I mean, people would have been ringing up from everywhere that they got a madman in, you know, an arrested man. Anyhow, I got, we got through it, and it's been a pleasant memory, you know, but I wouldn't want to do it Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays. That's the same. Don't you do some silly things? But anyway, I was all in a good cause.
And the broadcasting, Frank, can you tell me the years? How many years did you call the grand final for 2UE?
The big thing about that is I was never, ever beaten in a survey, in a broadcast survey.
You had the highest ratings?
Highest rating from the time I started to the time I retired, I was never, ever beaten in a survey. You know that?
That's a great tribute to your calling. And that, how many years from the time you started to the end? 1953 to 86, is that right? It's 53.
53.
That's right. Because I have it here. I have an interview here with the Catholic Weekly, and I think they say you did it for 31 years with 2SM. Is that right?
Yeah.
So.
When did I finish? 83, did I?
83, and so I think you started in 56, is it? Just looking here. We'll check that anyway. I think it was
63, I think, to 83, 31 years. No, that'll be 21 years.
That'll be 21, yeah. So 53 to 83.
Yeah.
That's the one. That's what you did, 31.
Yeah, 53 to 83.
Right.
God's gift to the human ear.
You obviously enjoyed it.
I did. Nothing's easy. Nothing is easy if you try to do it well, you know. And I can honestly say I never uttered a sentence over the radio that I would not use in my kitchen. Right from the start, I promised myself that. I would never have it on my conscience to set a bad example. I never used any language at all on the air.
This is the end of MPSM4 side A. This is the start of SM4 side B. Well, what was your famous quote that you're famous for?
It's long enough, it's high enough. I'll tell you how that happened. I was broadcasting, and in those days I was broadcasting from the sideline at the cricket ground. I came home from broadcasting one day and the phone rang. This was in the late evening on a Saturday. And the voice on the other end said, "Mr. Hyde, look, I want to apologise for disturbing you at home," he said, "but I don't know how else I could contact you." He said, "I'm representing the Blind Institute." He said, "We listen to your broadcast every match of the day from the Sydney Cricket Ground," which was every Saturday. And then, of course, later after that, on Sundays too. And he said, he said, we all listen, and because you paint a picture with words, and that's all we can go by. I said, what do you mean, paint a picture? He said, well, do you know, when a try is scored, he said, you go back and tell us again where it started from and what happened and what happened to the try. He said, you are our eyes. I said, oh yes, I suppose I am. He said, but there is one thing, he says, that we don't get from you. He said, you broadcast the kick at goal, but you don't describe it. I said, oh, just a minute. What can I describe in a kick at goal? He said, well, shut your eyes. He said, what would you want to see? In words, where the wind was coming from, how far it was from the goalpost, was it to the right or the left? The more he talked, the more I realised what a billy goat I'd been, you know. I was broadcasting for people who could see. My description was also for people who could see, but the description of a kick at goal was not given to the blind. I said, by gee, you're right. I said, you listen next Saturday. And that's how that started. It's long enough, it's high enough, it's straight between the posts, you know. After a while, every second person, I'd walk down George Street, you know, and I'd, it's high enough, it's long enough, and it's straight between the posts. But of course, I realised that it was a service I wasn't giving. And that's what it was all about. From then on, I described the kick. I described which way the wind was coming over his right shoulder. He'll need to allow for it to curve it in, you know. And if you're blind, well, you can see it.
Wonderful, yeah. To give them word pictures. That's terrific, yeah. Frank. Frank, we're getting towards the end, actually. But I'm wondering if I could ask you a favour. Would you have a go at Danny Boy for me? How do you feel?
Have a go at Danny Boy?
Well, you're famous for singing it, aren't you?
I could play it. I could play it on a disc, or I'd sing Danny Boy. Without music.
Oh yeah, just sing me one verse, just so, because I'd love to hear it.
Before we record it, let's see if you think it's worthwhile.
Okay.
Where do you want to hear?
Just here, yeah.
Just for it, don't record it. Record the second one if you think it's okay.
Okay.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the flowers are dying. It's you must go, and I must bide. But come ye back when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. It's I'll be here in sunshine or in shadow, oh Danny boy, oh Danny boy, I love you so. Do you want any more?
Beautiful. No, that's beautiful, Frank. That
you
is
want the
beautiful.
Second verse?
Ah, the one about kneel and say an ave there for me. I'd love to hear the second verse if you're up to it. It's beautiful.
But when ye come and all the flowers are dying. If I am dead, as dead I well may be, you'll come and find the place where I am lying, and kneel and say an ave there for me. But I shall hear the soft you tread above me, and all my grave will warmer, sweeter be. For you will bend and tell me that you love me, and I shall sleep in peace until you come to me.
Ah, oh, Frank, that's beautiful.
I bet you tell that to all the little blokes.
No, I mean that, and I'm Irish. I mean that, and you sounded so Irish when you sang it. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
My father used to sing that.
Did he?
Yes, he did, and it's a beautiful song, but that's beautiful. It took me back. It took me back. Oh, I think we'll... it's hard to follow that, so we might stop in a minute. Just before we stop, have you been back to Miller's Point lately at all?
No. I'm intending to go down all the time.
Mm.
I'm intending. Like to go into the Hero Waterloo Hotel, the Palisade Hotel, the Dumbarton Hotel. You know, my doctor, I nursed him as a baby. He's the grandson of Con Armstrong, who has the Palisade Hotel down at Miller's Point.
Oh.
And the funny thing, I was going to New Zealand in 38, and we were going, you might remember the name of that, the boat they used to call, the Greyhound of the Pacific. Anyhow, big luxury liner. Anyhow, Ray Steer, who was a player for Eastern Suburbs, roughest bags, you know. He was standing on the deck, and I'm leaning over, waving to different ones, because it was only 200 yards from where I was born, you know, that we were sailing out. And Ray Steer was alongside, leaning over, and the bloke, one of the wharf labourers down there, to go, "Hey, Frank!" You know, I say, "Oh, good, Charles, how are you going?" "Hey, Frank, listen, when you get outside the heads," he said, "chuck that bloody steer overboard." And Steer, he said, "Oh, friends of yours." He was until now. Yeah.
And
it's funny thing, not many years after, I lifted him up in his bed just 10 minutes before he died. Right. Yeah.
Not many years after, was he not an old man? He died young.
Oh yeah, well he died at Brighty. He had grandkids, you know, when he died, and I was out to see him, and I helped Gwenny, his wife, to lift him up and make him comfortable in the bed and put the pillow on him, and then I was on my own. I came home, and when I got home, the phone that rung on the way home, he died. So Gabe had to tell me when Yeah, great bloke, Steery. When you're playing with him, but when you were playing against him, he was a mongrel.
So, what do you think of the way that the point has changed since your day, Frank?
The way
the Miller's point has changed.
Oh, well, I don't know how it's changed, really. I mean, the houses are just the same, but, you know, there were no cars parked outside the doors when we lived there. That's the only difference. I mean, people are living better. There had no changes in the houses. I mean, I could take you into the house that I was born in and point out every corner in every room, you know? Ah, yes.
Do your children ever go in and have a look around?
No, they don't. You know, you're imposing on people, you know. I've been down there a few times and, well, when that this thing was on with the Governor of the Rocks, you know, I had to go down a few times and, you know, blokes that I went to school with and blokes that I played against when Windmill Street played High Street, or Windmill Street played Lower Fourth Street.
And it sounds like Windmill Street always won. It sounds like Windmill Street always won.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Not necessarily. There are some good players. As a matter of fact, a particular mate of mine whose name was Jack Hyde. No relation. That's him there.
I see him.
He was the best man at my wedding. But Jack Hyde, no relation. No relation, strangely enough. And he could have... Jack Hyde, Mutt, we used to call him, Mutt Hyde. He had more ability with a bat in his hand than I could ever think of being. He had more... We watch the television here now and I see someone cover drive in test cricket, you know, to say Mutt Hyde would have had it hitting the fence 10 seconds before that did. You know, that's how good he was. But, you know, the only thing that kept him back, mucked his hair up. Jack Hyde, he would have been as good as any batsman I've ever seen. He could run like a deer. Couldn't tackle though. I took him down the Domain to get him to have a run with a little side I had down there. And it was full back. And a bloke broke through. And there was only Jack and this bloke. And as the bloke went past him, Jack went. That was his tackle.
So he was afraid of it. He knocked.
That's the funny thing about sport, you know.
Yeah.
If you've got it, you've got it. If you haven't got it, you'll never get it.
Did you say he knocked his hair up? What do you mean?
Mucked his hair up.
You mean he was afraid of?
Oh yeah.
Of mucking his hair up.
Oh yeah. Oh well, you know. They knocked a part out of his hair. He liked his hair to be parted.
Oh.
Line going up both sides.
So he didn't want to get all mucked up.
No.
And therefore he wouldn't get physical.
Yeah.
Sorry, it took me a while to get that.
No.
Last question. Was there a difference being from Miller's Point or from the Rocks, or was it all the same thing to you guys?
All the same. No, I mean, see, the rocks stopped being the Rocks when the bridge came over. See, you know you go over the bridge a lot. You know where you pay your toll?
Yeah.
That's where we live. 97 Princess Street. That's where just about where I was the only one.
We're just finishing, Gabby. Literally, we're just finishing. We're just finishing now.
Yeah. I was the only one that wasn't born up there at 97 Princess Street. And it's just in the mum, just where the toll is now. I pointed it, 97 Princess Street, where we were.
I don't know that.
No. But anyhow, yes, it was there. And we saw that all being built and pulled about, you know.
And the rocks stopped being the rocks once the bridge was built.
Well, that's right, once the bridge was built, no rocks now.
But did you people in Miller's Point feel you were part of a special Miller's Point community?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there was a loyalty there, you know. I mean, but it all depends how things were going. I mean, to say, there's not very many that would put themselves out, you know, to do something, except in little groups, in little areas. Like in Windmill Street, for example. Everybody in Windmill Street knew each other. Didn't matter whether they were Catholic or non-Catholic or they're all Labour voters, you know, because that was the type of person they were. Otherwise, they wouldn't be living in that area, you know. But, I don't know. You become affiliated, I think, with an area, just merely because you're part and parcel of it.
That's great, Frank. I better stop you there because I know that you have to go. Thank you very, very much. It's been wonderful to talk to you.
It's an honour to think you'd want to do such a thing.
No, it's been great. Thank you very much. I'm sorry to hold you up, Gabby. I know we've gone along. He's been great. I'm just going to put an announcement on the tape and then stop. This is the end of MP SM4, side B.
Come on. Yeah.